Hi guys, I just wanted to jump on here with little Bo. Say hey, Bo.
Hi.
Okay. And we just wanted to let everyone know about our upcoming live shows.
Ooh.
We have several coming up. The first one is Queers Live. Bo, tell them.
Oh, babe, it's inspired from the very inspired by, I should say,
yeah, inspired
the very
by.
First queer Divas Live, starring all your favorite divas. But we're just putting a little queer spin on it. We're gonna have so many great people: Larry Owens, Cole Escola, Josh Sharp, Aaron Jackson,
yes, Peter Smith,
and more to be announced. More queers,
more to be announced. Musical directed by the one and only Henry Kapersky.
Ooh.
This is on Monday, November 26th at Joe's Pub, the one and only. It's our very first ever Las Culturistas show at Joe's Pub. We love the folks over there. We're going to be,
so
recording a little video promo for it in the coming weeks. You might see it. And you can get tickets at the Joe's Pub website. So please head over and do that. And then we have the gag, of course. It's I Don't Think So, Honey, live at the Bell House on November 30th.
Yes, this is going to be a pretty new batch of folks. We are really going to show you some new faces, darling. Our last one was like a Legends Ball type gig, but this is going to be such a fun, fresh experience. It's going to be so great. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, you got to get your tickets to our I Don't Think So, Honey, live at the Bell House on November 30th. And if you're on the West Coast, honey, I'm coming to you.
Ooh.
And I'm going to be doing I Don't Think So, Honey, live at the Regent in downtown LA on December 5th. The lineup will be announced shortly, as will the Bell House lineup, but this is going to be so much fun. I loved our show that we did at Echoplex.
It was so fun. I can't believe I'm missing this one.
But you know what? It's for a good reason.
Okay.
Which is your wedding
to
yourself.
Yes.
Just kidding. He has work. So listen, I cannot wait. And then selfishly, I want to just plug a little show that I do here in New York City at the Duplex. It's called Have You Heard of Christmas?
Oh, I love this show.
Thank you, baby. I'm really excited. It's going to be on December 11th, December 18th, and December 22nd. So I'm going to do that show three times. And I really want you guys to come. You can get tickets, which are on sale right now.
Ooh, those are the shows, and that's the gauntlet.
Special
and you
guests.
Better, special guests.
And that's musical directed by Henry Kapersky as well.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait for all of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
I will be at 3 out of 4 of them for
sure. Honey.
So please get those tickets and check them out.
Yes. Forever.
Dog.
Look, Matt.
Where?
Oh, I see. Wow. Bowen, look over there.
Wow, is that
culture? Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Las Culturistas.
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling.
Well, there's a nor'easter out there.
Define
it. Define what a nor'easter is for all the kids that don't know, because I didn't know until 2 years ago
this was. I never cared for meteorology. I'll do my best.
Wow.
Al
Roker.
Of all the
you
sciences.
You thought you did a good thing this week? No, bitch.
Of all the sciences, of all the sciences, it's the most performative one, right?
Oh, okay. So you're saying they need to be talented.
No, but I'm saying like a meteorologists have to have star power. And have a science knowledge.
Right.
Which is so interesting. Oh, wait. I should write a whole fucking...
You should write a piece on
this. On this.
It should be a piece. And can I say something? Meteorologists often wrong?
I mean, it's just their job is to predict... To sort of... They have a margin of error just inherent in the job.
And
you know what I'm saying?
I would say it's the biggest margin of error amongst the sciences.
They're able to be wrong and everyone's like, yeah, but that's normal.
That's weather.
That's par for the course.
I don't like that very much.
I think it's... Lovely. I think it's a beautiful ease of pressure. Like, you know, you don't have to be exact or empirical.
Right,
you can
just
be loose about it.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Al Roker,
mm-hmm.
Fine wine.
Love him. He's
better with age.
Better with age. And I love that he was the one who really spoke out against Megyn Kelly.
He was the one who, I guess, well, you know, they said something on the 7 a.m. hour.
Right.
And then that carried over because later on, the president of NBC News, Andy Lax, he was like, you're right, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I am thrilled
that
Megyn Kelly is
kaput. Of all of this, I can't believe the CAA drop. That's crazy.
And what's even
the gag
was in talks with UTA, and then they said, sorry, we can't take you now.
Oh my God.
So now Megyn Kelly is without, honey, a talent agent. And it's actually rule of culture number 4. You gotta
have a talent agent. You gotta, no
in
matter the field.
In this talent industry, it's all about that.
See, this is the thing. I would assume that meteorologists have some sort of talent
agent. You know Al Roker is WME.
WME.
I would assume. We can look it up.
We can look it up.
Because you know he's done some credits in films.
And you know we have IMDb Pro accounts.
I have an IMDb Pro account. I pay an exorbitant amount of money for it.
Yeah, it's stupid. And just to check my star meter ranking, which is like in the 50,000s all constantly.
Yeah, but that's actually a very privileged thing to say because you know I'm in the like 80,000s at all times.
Oh, no.
I'm always lagging behind you. Not that I keep score.
Oh, my goodness. We can't do this here.
Can't do this here, not in front of our guests.
We'll do couples therapy. We'll go on Naomi and Andy's podcast.
I still am considering the couples therapy situation.
For us?
Well, no, I shouldn't say that. I don't think we need it.
No, we don't need it yet, but you should go into reg therapy.
I need regular therapy, and it's a sicko thing that I haven't gotten it yet. And I was thinking on the train today because I was a little sad today, to be honest.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the weather. Maybe it's just the weather.
I can't stand the rain.
Maybe.
Okay.
But I was feeling a little sad today, and I was like, yeah, the therapy thing needs to happen.
It does. For everybody. I mean, it's not just specific to you. It just everyone could benefit from it. And I'm entering an exciting new chapter in my therapy journey. And that means that...
What is it? Can you share?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was, like, talking to my therapist about this, like... just like a hookup I had recently, and I was
hot.
Like, and I was like, yeah, but I felt some sort of shame about it afterwards. And she was like, okay, like, and she was like, do you feel comfortable talking about this here? And I was like, absolutely. And then,
oh my god,
and then like 2 minutes later, like I bring up the, and this is super morbid and sad, but I don't mean for it to be. But then we bring up the conversion therapy thing, and I was mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, like I at a very young age had an adult link shame to.
Sexuality,
mm-hmm. and like, or just sex in general. Like the exercise was, like this conversion therapist was like, when I was 17, was like, okay, let's walk through every instance you've had a male attraction in the last year
this
or
so.
This is so
insane
and,
to me.
And then like his whole the thing that he projected onto everything was there is shame associated to each and every one of these things. So he literally imprinted that onto me as I was like developing sexually. And I was like,
And then I
didn't realize that until current therapist was like, wait, like this is something that we have to work through. And I was like, absolutely, let's do it. And I'm so excited. So it's going
to
be great.
I need to have things like that.
It's perfect. Everyone must.
Though I don't think we should have the same therapist. Absolutely
not.
That would be a rule.
She knows a lot about you.
She does. Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
and I'll talk about that in my therapy.
Right? Wow. Okay. Oh, my God.
Speaking of therapists,
I think we have like a true...
Comedy therapy.
She's a true preeminent mind in the comedy world.
I have to say something.
Please.
I've actually been a fan of this person, I've realized, for 11 years.
Really?
And here's why. Because Knocked Up.
Yeah.
Knocked Up, you had a scene with Katherine Heigl where you played like her wardrobe girl.
Yes.
And she's like, I forget what it was, either she's not fitting into the outfit like she used to, or she's hungry or mm-hmm, something, or mm-hmm. both. She's frustrated. And like this man that was like trying to like talk to her is like away. And it's just you. It's just Tammy and Katherine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Tammy goes, you know, you're a baby. They want you to gain a whole mess of weight. And Katherine Heigl just goes, are you fucking kidding me? I just remember like that exchange. Like I was like laughing so hard. Me and all my high school friends were laughing so hard. And then like literally the scene ends with like being like, I'm sorry. That was really inappropriate. And she'd be like, it's okay. It was just so good.
It's one of those.
But that's when I realized I first saw you.
It's one of those scene stealers that you're like, who is that?
And since then, you've literally written for all of our favorite shows. And I would imagine like our listeners' favorite shows.
Oh, yeah.
30 Rock, How I Met Your Mother, Mad TV, Orange
Schumer.
Is the New Black, Inside Amy Schumer, and featured on Inside Amy Schumer, Girls.
Ugh.
I mean, like, truly, like, this, it's got to feel good to have touched so many of these formative television shows, and we're going to get into
it. We're so excited to have her. Oh, and Don't Think Twice. She was on the show.
Oh, yes,
movie.
Of course. Don't Think Twice.
Oh, my God. I saw Don't Think Twice in this gorgeous theater downtown in Denver with a bunch of NPR loving motherfuckers, and they ate it up, and they ate Tammy up. And so please give a warm ear welcome to our guest,
Tammy Singer.
Oh my God, such a fan.
Well, come on.
Fan.
You can't say that because it's like my I'll smile too big.
No, you guys, like I was telling you, I am horrified at how long it took me to find Las Culturistas.
Whatever.
Just a few months ago. And then I think I have listened to every episode, which is hundreds of hours
hundreds
that you've
hours?
Spent in my brain.
Oh my God.
Hundreds of hours.
But explain, because Tammy just recorded an episode of Seek Treatment, yes. which I am very excited to hear.
So excited to hear.
It's not a competition.
It's not a competition at all.
I love that you guys made that clear.
We got ahead of the
narrative. I watched the Instagram story about it. That's how obsessed with you guys I am.
It's just, you know, there's people out there who want to watch the world burn. One of them is Joel Kim Booster. He came on here, and you'll hear his episode of Las Culturistas coming out. Oh, it must have already come out.
It would have come out by now, yes.
And he sets the record straight about the Las Culturistas versus Seek Treatment situation.
I don't know that the Las Culturistas one has come out yet.
It hasn't come out yet.
No.
But before this episode, it will.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
And
yes.
everything will be clear.
Okay, but I have to say, even in Seek Treatment, he made it clear. Look, yes. no, this is not a competition.
Right. Okay, yes.
It's
yes,
just
yes.
that this is, you guys have had my friends on.
Exactly.
Right, yeah, right, yes.
That's
see,
what it is.
Tammy knows every contour.
I'm literally have been plunged in the depths of your pools.
Oh, my goodness.
Of my pools?
Yes.
Listen, is it because you love Pat Regan?
Okay, so I didn't even know.
How did it come about?
Okay, so Pat Regan did the show called We Will Turn You Gay,
yes.
right? That was the name
Genius.
Of it. At Del Close Marathon.
Yes.
I just stay to watch it because I love Brandon Scott Jones.
He's one of the best.
One of the best.
BSJ is a light.
A light.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I just was like, I'll stay and watch it. Changed my life.
Yeah, it's
it
so good.
It just reminded me of the joy of improv yes. and the joy of friendship.
Yes.
And also like Brian Foss, who I've performed with for years.
Yeah.
I have never seen him improvise like that.
Oh,
like,
really?
Physically and emotionally. I was just like, okay, fuck straight people.
Honestly, like, gotta go. Gotta go.
Like, seriously, like, Whatever.
Were Josh and Aaron in that show as
yeah,
well?
Not Aaron. Aaron was. So it was Aaron, Brian, Pat, and BSJ.
So
and then
good.
I saw the Instagram stories and the Instagrams of you guys just all going out afterwards, grabbing a bite.
We grabbed a bite at Bear Burger.
Love I love it. That's part of culture.
Part of culture.
And it was just like, who is this delightful young man named Pat Regan?
Oh,
and everybody was like, whoever was at the show, now I feel bad because I can't remember. And it was like, Morgan.
Oh, yes.
Grace Jarrett.
Oh, yes.
Everyone with the three names.
Yes.
She was like, Pat was my favorite improv student. And like BSJ, of course, was like, Pat's the best.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, I didn't
we got
even
know.
Yeah, I didn't know who this Pat was. And he was like, I left improv and all this.
Right.
And now I do stand up. This is only show. And I was like, okay, I'm obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
Started following him.
Yeah.
And then he announced I'm going to do this show called Seek Treatment. And I was like, that's a brilliant title.
Yeah.
No idea who this Kat Cohen character is. Whatever.
Uh-huh.
I love a podcast.
Yeah.
And so then I was like Googling it. Of course, it's not going to be on for weeks.
Right.
But
gotta wait.
Then the other thing you find in iTunes, if you Google Pat Regan, is Las Culturistas.
Yes, famously.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. And then just years.
Oh man.
Just years. And it just, you guys became my nearest and dearest. And then my heart jumped 5 million feet. Like, cause you've mentioned, like, there was a Jeff Hiller episode that
yes.
I was like,
yeah,
oh my God, you brought
everybody.
Up Gravid Water that I was in a scene with him. And I was like, I know who I am.
Oh.
And it just like, I can't even, and I've been talking about you guys to other people. I was just telling Jason Kim.
Oh, yes.
And you guys had Jeremy Beeler on. I
yes,
would say Beeler, but it's
Jeremy.
Beiler.
Yeah.
Beiler. Yep. I would say Beeler, but it's Beiler.
Could be either,
on
paper.
But it's Beiler.
But it
He's
is.
Fully
Strongly
my
Beiler.
Friend.
Let it be known.
Rule of culture number 88. It's Beiler. It's actually true.
And
it's real.
Tammy's friend.
And
yeah,
Tammy's
and
friend.
He's my friend, so don't mispronounce it.
We gotta have Jeremy on.
We gotta have Jeremy.
You have to.
Yes. He's only done a live show.
Yes. Fucking heard because I'm seriously have heard hundreds of hours
Tammy,
of you guys.
I can't believe that.
But you guys have introduced me to so many amazing comedic voices, including your own, but also like I've been telling people, I was like, you are the future of comedy, and then I was like, no, you're not. You're fucking comedy. I was like, no, you guys are like not even the future of comedy. You're just straight up comedy. No, it's true. And it's also like, then I was like, okay, I need to be more on top of things because I need to know who the future of comedy is. But like,
but
I went and saw Larry Owens because
you
of
did?
You guys.
Oh
yes.
My God. Did you go on Tuesday at Caroline's?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I heard it was phenomenal.
It was phenomenal.
Fantastic.
Kat was phenomenal.
Yes.
Like, and the other two comics on it were great, except they're stand-ups. And like, they were excellent stand-ups.
Sure.
But I don't love stand-up.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, but like other people do.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
God bless. It's just, it's also like whenever anybody's like, I hate improv, I'm like, I totally get it.
I get
right.
it too.
I
right.
totally get it. But Kat and Larry are just.
It's a progression. It feels like that, right?
It feels like an evolution.
Yeah.
Yes.
I always say like, I mean, it's so interesting that, but it feels like this something happened in New York, and we talk about this often, but because I also came up through UCB, and so like I was on Mod for about a year and a half, and Catherine was on Mod at the same time, and
she did.
We were on Mod. Mm-hmm. We were on the same night. We were on different teams, but and I knew her just from seeing her do her characters around. She'd see me do my characters around. We kind of like, you know, we're just knew each other like that, mm-hmm. and I got this sense watching her on stage. I was like, she can do so much more than what she's allowed to do right now in this moment. Mm. And I felt the same way. I felt like, you know, I haven't figured it out yet. And then, you know, there was some musicians that also crossed over with comedy. And then it kind of became this thing of like, let's sing and like, let's kind of like embrace different kind of mediums. And it just was weird because it also kind of felt like it really was the queer comedy community and like the Brooklyn community all coming together. And then UCB people who knew form really well, all combining together and just kind of mishmashing to create.
And
this
what
sort
you
of,
guys created with, was it
Pop Roulette,
which I'm telling you, I feel like so many years behind the thing,
but
you guys have created, like
Pop Roulette was fun. And you know, I always felt like Pop Roulette might have been, I said if Pop Roulette was happening right now, I think it would be huge. But because it was happening then and we really were at the Pit a lot, like, and I love the Pit, but it's very community driven, like it kind of stayed within its bubble.
Yeah.
We did do a show at UCB for a year, but like towards that point we were kind of like, the group was kind of like, you know, phasing out, but yeah.
But I also have to say, like, there's a thing of like musical theater that is very on the margins.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And like, it's less on the margins now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But as somebody who cannot sing, does not enjoy musical theater, like, I was very much like, yeah, it's fine that it's on the margins. Like, I was part of the marginalization problem. But then there's like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend now. Yeah. And then there's like Larry and Kat and like what you guys do. And like that episode that Larry was on with you guys, which also, first of all, is I Don't Think So, Honey.
Yes, I Don't Think So, Honey.
Blew my mind. It like literally gave me chills.
I still think about it when it's I see him. It's
amazing.
So funny.
Being there was electric.
Have you recovered from it?
What's that? I have nice.
No, your friendship.
Absolutely. Larry and I are, but then Larry the other day, Larry keeps apologizing to me, not for that, but for something else.
But it should be that.
No, I'm kidding.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. Larry will say things to me all the time, and I just like accept it for what it is, which is just him. Like, he was like, the other day, he was like, oh no, like people, he was like, people, this was the nicest thing that was also veiled in like an insult. He was like, no, people like you, people as smart as you are always inherently chaotic and evil. And I was like,
well, that's fully mean.
I was like,
I love that you're like, there's a tiny tinge of like mean to it.
Well, he was like, called you bad.
Smart, he called you chaotic evil.
And I was like, but I don't think I am. And then like 20 minutes later, he was like, I don't know why I said that. I'm so sorry. And I was don't worry.
He said it because it's hilarious.
It's very funny. What a funny notion.
He gave me a backhanded compliment as well. He was like, I never worry about you on stage. I know you're always going to kill. And like, there's not always jokes, but like, you always kill. And I'm like, Larry. I was like, I was here before you. I'll be here long after you.
God.
It's so funny because so seeing him at Caroline's, like, he fully, he's... It's insane.
Dynamic.
It's insane. But it was also, I went with Jason Kim.
Jason.
And
sorry, anytime you mention Jason Kim, I'll be like,
but it's also like you just use like a soundboard on your phone.
Jason.
Yeah.
But it was, we were sitting at a table with this girl who brought her parents,
uh-huh.
which was fine. We loved them until they did not shut the fuck up all the way through the show. And also, like, the 2-drink minimum just meant that they were talking more and more and more. But she just kept being like, he's so nice, really. Because he also, like, his stage persona is like, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
Right,
like,
right,
we'll
right,
just
yeah.
not say please or thank you on stage.
Nope.
So I think that's like also his, like, comedic persona. But right, I also think, like, I don't know. Like, it's hard when you're a people pleaser.
Totally.
And you end up like me personally, mm-hmm, I'm not going to, mm-hmm. I don't know Larry at all. Even though I've heard him on several podcasts, but I have to admit that does not mean that I know him.
We are not yet close.
No, but I'm a people pleaser.
Yes.
And I end up being my meanest when I am people pleasing too much because you just feel like stepped on, even though I'm the one doing the stepping.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what I mean? And I do feel like, I mean, he always talks about like code switching. I think like, code switching is automatic people pleasing.
Totally.
Right?
Well, it's
it's exhausting and it makes
pleasing
you resentful.
The majority.
Yeah,
totally. I mean, does that ever come through in your work? You would say because I feel like you're seeing that in Larry's sort of performance persona, and like that is like his comedy is sort of like, I mean, is like sort of the vessel for that thing. Like, when you write, is that a weird question? Like,
no, not at all.
Like, are you like in a room? Like, are you? I don't know. What are the politics of that when you're in a writer's room where you're like,
It's really interesting because mm-hmm. so much of a writer's room is, and it's different on different shows. Mm-hmm. Writer's rooms are different on different shows. But so right now I'm at Orange is the New Black.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it is the most argumentative room that I've ever been in.
Really?
Cool.
And it's wild. Uh-huh. Like, I'm not used to that uh-huh. at all. And it's actually been really exciting and really cool. And we really get into it about stories.
Yep.
And it's, as someone who's like as conflict phobic as I am, right. it's been really educational.
Great. Do you think that's because like people that watch Orange is the New Black, like they're not just watching it as a pure comedy. They're watching it because there are so many social issues commented
1
on.
1,000,000%.
And that's different. It's worth fighting about.
1,000,000%. Quote, unquote. Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. And I would take the quote unquote off of it.
Yeah.
I really would. Fighting. And like, and I also think like, you know, all of us who are writers there now, we're all there. Most of us are there from season 6 and
right.
7.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple who've been there from season 5, uh-huh. and that's it. But the stories from the beginning are like, this is a room that argues and cares, and people care passionately.
Right,
and
right.
Genji and Tara, like, that's what they promote.
Yeah.
But it 100% is because of the issues.
Yeah, well, I guess that would have to be. I mean, it's not something like, you know, I would imagine, like, Amy Schumer, like her room is probably more, is it more fun, like if it's a sketch show or kind of?
You know, I don't even know that it's as much about that.
Yeah.
I think it's also just like people not being afraid.
I see.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even, because I've definitely heard about comedy rooms that are really argumentative.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even. But
the chemistry of the room.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I do think that this show, like, we definitely get into it. Although, like, the ugliest fights have been about comedy. Like, that's when I was like, I don't like, this is
yeah,
not
this
feel
is,
like.
This doesn't feel good anymore.
No, no,
we're
no,
not
no.
arguing about, like, the greater good.
No,
it's
no,
like,
no.
no, you're not as funny as me!
Yeah.
No, it's not even, like, even yeah. that general. It's literally like, no, that joke needs to go in the next beat. No, it's not. A, and then it's just like, oh,
yeah.
this is a
and
matter
it's just, like,
of taste.
We're just hearing it differently.
Yeah,
we,
yeah.
we sometimes, like, whenever we have to, like, sit down and, like, write shit together, I'm always there's these little moments where it's like, no, I think it's a beat and then this line, or like this line
oh
and then
God.
A beat, and it's like this moment of like, I don't think we'll agree
okay
here.
No, and you want to,
it is the ugliest,
it is the ugliest
is.
Okay, so two things, two thoughts I had. One is mm-hmm. okay, so do you listen, all I do is listen to podcasts, I don't have friends, but my favorite murder,
yeah, oh yeah, we listen to it.
Okay, they have famously gone to therapy together.
Yes,
they have,
yes,
a couples counselor,
heard
and
of this.
They are astronomically successful,
right, right, right,
and yep. so it's like, I don't think that's a bad idea
no.
for you guys,
no,
at all,
right,
because you are
probably
in a business
not.
together,
totally, and we've
like,
alluded,
this
yeah.
is a partnership.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the other thing I was going to say about writing with somebody is, I really do feel like finding somebody that you write well with is mm-hmm. like one-on-one, that's like falling in love, like it's
yeah.
very special and very rare. Like, you can write with a lot of different people, but finding somebody where it doesn't feel like you want to fucking kill them and yourself
all the time,
all the
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
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 I
yeah,
feel
yeah,
like
yeah.
that all the time with
yeah.
most people,
especially when you get put in a room that you didn't necessarily, like, you're happy to be in, but you didn't necessarily choose the people in it. And by didn't necessarily, I mean you did not at all. Like, so it's like, and then my thing is like, you're at SNL now, and so now it's just kind of like, because you have a lot of friends there,
mm-hmm.
it almost feels like, well, I had the option to write with someone I know historically before this, but that's not always the case. I mean, they can put
totally.
You on different things, and then you have to navigate your own
totally.
Emotional response to their creative process,
but also even somebody that you like. I mean, there have been so many people that I love, and I don't necessarily love writing with
yeah,
them.
Sure.
It's just
well,
a
totally.
Different. It's a different beast.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Wow.
In fact, like we. Now I try to, whenever we're like not agreeing on something, what I always like to say, and this is the same with Sudi, who's my other writing partner, and like, you know, when I've written shows with other people, it's always Dave I work with, it's always kind of like, let's vocalize the fact that this is a thing. Let's talk about like what it is
why
that
we're
not agreeing on
yeah.
and potentially why, because I think that'll like, that'll get it out in the open, and then we can really actually get down to justifying why we both think this thing, and then we can move on.
And has that been effective?
I think it has.
I'm genuinely curious.
Well, I think that when you're really honest, at least you can understand where the other person is coming
yeah,
from.
Yeah.
We had a breakthrough last weekend.
Ooh,
we
I want to hear
we
about
did.
It.
We had an emotional breakthrough. It wasn't a creative breakthrough.
Yeah, it was
necessary.
The best
kind of breakthrough.
It was feel well, okay, so here's the tea.
Yeah.
So we went up to upstate New York.
Yep.
me
saw the
Sudi,
pictures on the gram.
Yeah, we were. I actually was actively trying not to post because I was trying to enjoy my experience.
You were
because
very
we
good
did
about it.
For the very first time. I had never done this, but we dropped acid.
Okay.
And so,
now I have never done acid or mushrooms, but I've heard mushrooms are the thing to do if you're in nature.
My friend, my other friend, who I won't say, they said she called herself a mushrooms girl, and I was like, okay.
Mushrooms
girl. And then I was like, is that why you were like, let's do acid?
But then my you know, I don't think he'd mind me saying this. My ex Henry, like, he was a big proponent of, you know, going out and doing acid and going out in the woods and or like in like some sort of park or something to be with nature. Just at all
psychedelics, yeah.
So we did that, and like that was amazing. Just like literally sitting next to a tree and being like, "This tree is alive." Like, and then later on, we did have a moment where I realized that I hadn't said something to you that I think I needed to say to you,
yes.
and you needed to hear.
Can you share? Or
is I will
it
share.
Too personal?
It. Okay. I will share. Right? I will share it. So when the SNL thing came about,
I feel like I'm gonna cry right now.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Like then they say, "Well, we are offering you a writing position," and then there's that moment where it's like, well, I take the writing position. And so it's that moment of like, we're honest with each other. We're best friends. We talk about it. And this thing of like, I have to decide whether or not this is happening.
Yeah.
And he did decide to. Mm-hmm. And that he had to call me and tell me that that was happening because there were plans for this podcast to move on and do other things. And I think this weekend was the first time I ever told you that had you not taken that job, that would have broken my heart. Like that would have like... And then I just like that was I when I said that to you, I realized that that was so important for me to say.
Yeah.
And for I think for you to hear.
Yeah.
How did it feel hearing it?
It was like overwhelmingly emotional where it just like breaks critical mass. And I had to sit with it. And like normally I'm pretty immediate in my emotional responses to things, but it took me a long time. I mean, a relatively long time. Like, and then when I started talking, that's when I started to tear up and cry. But like it was a big moment.
But it was, and you know, and the thing is too, like, it's weird. I actually think if I have to say what it is that kept me from saying that and vocalizing that, because we are very emotional people and we share a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to say, I think it goes back to this thing of like, don't be too emotional or forthcoming or like whatever it is. I do think it's like what you were talking about before, the kind of repression that exists inside.
But it's also like I'm so...
Oh my God, you are crying!
Whatever, it's okay, it's okay. But like that was beautiful. But also like you just as easily could have said like it broke my heart that you took it and I would have totally understood where you were coming from. And so like I am so... glad that you were at the place of it would have broken my heart if you hadn't taken it. Like
And I think I always knew that.
But that's that... really like if I'm Bowen, like I mean, wasn't there that like I could totally understand it if you would say like it broke my heart that you chose it. I get it. I totally get it. Yeah. But I also like you know what I mean?
Totally. I mean I spent the day sort of deciding. Mm-hmm. I've just had like give or take like 24 hours, give or take a few, to decide. Mm-hmm. And Matt knew, like Matt was there every step of the way. Like throughout that whole day, it wasn't like an open and shut thing. It was like I really had to like ruminate on it for like a limited amount of time.
Cause it was going to be a life change.
Yeah. And so, cause
it's interesting that yeses is also noes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It meant no to a lot of other stuff. Like it meant turning down other like opportunities that were happening like concurrently that were like already in motion, and it had to sort of put the kibosh on that and on those things. And so, yeah, it was a lot. It was a very fraught day. And then I called Matt and sort of like that. I knew that was like this like sort of locus of the friendship that like we would refer back to for a long time.
Wasn't that exactly the time that you guys went to The View?
It was the same day.
Oh my God. Okay.
It was the same day.
It was like, so that, like, the fact that that happened the same fucking day of just like you getting your heart stepped on in such a hilarious way.
Yeah, it was so
and then,
fucked
like,
up.
Bowen, like, fully, like, managing your feelings, because like that was like, oh, you did a hilarious I don't think so honey, but like watching it, like Bowen is fully like trying to be there for this kid who lost 100 pounds, but also then like looking at you, that the video of it got Bowen so much attention.
It's no
amazing, but it wasn't, but
you
again
know I was thinking about it
of
yeah.
course, but it's also, I will say this as a third person, it would not, it only existed in relationship.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. So of course it can feel like, oh my God, Bowen, the slow clap. But like the thing that was so amazing to me about it was the friendship. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I love about your guys and your podcast is the empathy and the love. Mm. And that's what all of that was. So it was also just like your, and it is like, it is funny because, it like, is. I know she means everything to you. And, yeah, oh, I need,
does.
I do need to tell you that my time at Mad TV, I met her the day after she won.
Because you guys because shot the American Idol sketch with
Deborah Wilson.
Deborah Wilson is Whitney.
Was Whitney.
It was like all these has-beens who like were competing.
Oh my God,
in
the
American
fact
Idol.
That you remember, I fully do not.
Oh my God, it was
and
fucking.
That, you know where that? You know what that was? Which then gave birth to Gru. I'm telling you,
Gru
is
Deborah Wilson as Whitney.
Gru
is derived from that.
I love that you guys
episode.
Know how amazing Deborah Wilson is.
Oh, absolutely.
Been lost. Like Maya been Rudolph lost. Is amazing.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Amazing.
But Deborah Wilson had the best Whitney Houston. That,
without question.
Fucking that cast. I will say, okay, this is
Stephanie Weir.
Stephanie Weir, one of the best of all time.
Even just Michael McDonald as like a queer, like, but people didn't know it at the time. But you look back and you're like, yes, that was
well,
a gay
man. Well, he
was
allowed to be on the show.
Totally. I'm, but like,
he's, you know, doing Gangbusters and like directs a million TV
totally.
Shows all the time. But he also has kind of your story. Well, but it took him even longer to come out because he was Orange County, grew up, and like, you know, in this like, Orange County is the Long Island of California.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that. Yeah, that cast was absolutely stacked.
You met Kelly the day after she won. Wait, you guys shot that the day after?
She had the same streaky highlights. I believe
it. Oh my God.
Remember, you can never forget those iconic blonde streaks.
Yeah.
Yes.
As your mom famously said.
As my mom famously said, you know that that's the only person who can pull it off, which is so questionable.
So also, like, you are not done meeting her. Like, that was just not the time.
I will say, I'm happy that it did not happen on live television.
Yes.
Because I've also talked about how I did the Stern after show the day she was on.
Yes.
And she was coming out and I literally went and hid because I was like, I just can't. This is not the time. I'm not strong enough to meet her right now. I had thought about meeting her the night before because it was happening and I was excited to be on Howard. I love Howard. And I was going to do the after show and I was thinking about the fact that I could meet her and I started to cry.
What would
so
be?
I was like, I can't meet her on television.
I get it.
Totally.
I get it. And you can't meet her in the audience.
No.
And like, thankfully, getting
a ticket.
It can't
be a public thing. It has to be for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what would be like the perfect controlled environment for you to meet Kelly?
I think that like maybe if she was like backstage at some event or something, I think that I would have to like maybe like approach her and be like, like, and maybe if I'm like somebody that she might know, like, I don't know, maybe I'd have to be on her level
a
little bit.
I mean, ideally, like, we're talking ideal.
Ideal.
She's coming to see you guys perform.
Can I tell
you
something?
Do you know what I mean? So it's not like you have to tell your whole story from the beginning. Like, she knows your story.
She knows. She's
coming. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to know something fucked up?
What?
Yeah, of course.
So our booker reached out to her people and they responded.
Yeah.
They responded. So it is like not outside the realm of possibility that I meet her.
Of course not.
But I will say this.
You will.
I will. But that she comes on.
Oh my God. Well, who knows?
Anyway.
I mean, honestly, I'm like, she's in the audience. She's like not even. Like, she's like fully in the audience.
Tammy wants to flip this.
Oh yeah. No, I'm flipping it. But
I would never allow it.
Okay, so the other thing is like,
yeah,
being in Second City for years,
yes,
and like famously being around people who become famous.
You are pure Chicago to me in like the best and all the best
Thank
ways.
You
Chicago just grew up there too?
Yeah.
I feel like you were like,
the fact that you knew you Chicago just like makes my head explode.
I feel like anyone, when you hear that anyone went to University of Chicago, I'm like,
yeah.
Like you went through that essay process and all of that.
Okay, but also it was not
it was different back then?
Yeah.
Oh, God,
I mean,
God,
I
God.
did did an essay, right?
You did an essay, but like now it's like they're crazy. It's
well,
like,
now
it
they
seems
are
like this
so,
is now a real academic thing.
Yeah. They have so gotten off on like how small the percentages of people
of the
that they accept it.
And this is the comedy major at University
no,
of Chicago?
No.
What is it?
It did not exist when I... Is there a comedy
major? I don't know that there is. I'm not
knowing what you guys are talking
it's
about.
It's just University of Chicago, just like one of... It's like, it might as well be an Ivy League school.
Oh, very prestigious guy.
And the personal statements that you write for the school specifically are like, they're not just like talk about a personal experience. They're like, okay, now like for this section of the essay, write a 500 word dialogue with the following words in it: seagull, like spoon, spatula, like.
Oh, that sounds just like improv.
It's just like
that fun.
It's like they're pushing you to like do stuff that you would never do.
How
in another
do you know that?
Because that was my dream school, University of Chicago.
Are you shitting me?
No, it's true.
NYU was not your dream school?
I mean, no.
Wow, some people dream different. That's actually a rule of culture number 77.
Some people dream different. So, but yes.
I still have 88. It's Byler.
She remembered the number. Okay, sorry.
Some people dream different.
But you were talking
88
about
88 and 77. We got...
Also, how much has your life been determined by the fact that you went to NYU? And isn't that crazy?
Everything about it.
Isn't that crazy?
Because I think it's like, you know, we essentially did start our professional careers as 19-year-olds.
100%!
Yeah, which is an advantage.
You were talking about Second City.
Oh, so being around people that, like, watching them get SNL mm-hmm. while you are across the stage from them.
Oh, crazy.
You know what I mean? Right. Or, like, watching them get whatever they get. Like, that stuff. And then just being, like, on stage and being like, I am the person who, when the show is happening, you're not watching me. Which is like such a mind fuck.
Totally.
So I've so been in that position.
But then look at
like Natasha Rothwell. Have you?
Love, totally.
Oh my God.
And who's like, I love Insecure.
The star of stars.
I love Insecure.
One of the most exciting shows that is out there.
I know. And then she's going to be in freaking the next Wonder Woman.
I cannot believe this.
But it's also like, or Jesse Klein.
Right. Let's face it, Matt, nobody likes going to the doctor.
It can be inconvenient.
It can be very inconvenient. You have to take time off work and drive across town to talk to a stranger, essentially, about your most intimate needs.
And sometimes they can get intimate.
And they can get intimate.
Yeah.
Yes, the needs. While being poked and prodded and feeling judged.
But luckily, there's PlushCare. Using PlushCare is a great way to discuss with a trained physician whether Truvada or PrEP is right for you. You probably already know, guys, that Truvada for PrEP is over 98% effective in preventing HIV, and now you can get PrEP from the comfort of your own home. And we want to just make sure that everyone knows mm-hmm. you should always be using PrEP in conjunction with a condom.
Yes, it's actually rule of culture number 72.
You should always be using PrEP in conjunction with a condom.
PlushCare lets you see a doctor quickly via video from your phone or computer, and most major insurance is accepted, so you pay your usual copay and appointments are available every 15 minutes.
There is a reason why PlushCare is the largest online provider of Truvada in the U.S. Our visits are 100% confidential. That means no judgments, no stigmas, no side eye from a girl, your eye. They will also be working with your insurance to get your medications covered or help you find a cost assistance program.
Getting Truvada is simple. Go to plushcare.com/prep today or search PlushCare, one word, on the App Store. Book a 15-minute appointment and pick up from your local pharmacy.
Use the promo code DING DONG for $30 off your next appointment. Again, that's the promo code DING DONG for $30 off your next appointment. So visit plushcare.com/prep today, and you can use the promo code DING DONG, DINGDONG, for $30 off your next appointment. Let me ask you a question, y'all. Would you ever in your life, even once, buy a t-shirt for $50 if you actually knew it only cost $7 to make? I would not. And with Everlane, you never overpay for quality duds, aka clothes. Everlane only makes premium essentials using the finest materials without traditional markups. And you get to know the real costs of what you're getting, so you know you are never overpaying. I mean, I would hate to overpay for a little cheap dud. Everlane wants you to know what you're paying for and why. There's radical transparency here about every step in the process, from the materials they use to the ethical factories they work with. Ethical being the key word there. Because Everlane sells directly to you, their prices are 30 to 50% lower than traditional retailers. Everlane's clothes look better, cost less, and last longer. Now, there are so many essentials that are really great over at Everlane, including their Cotton Crew t-shirt. It's simple, stylish, and it's made from quality materials, like I've been saying. The cashmere crew, that's something I've seen Bowen rock 100%. I love a straight fit denim. They got it over at the Everlane. The Twill Weekender bag for all you people on the go. I mean, the list goes on and on. Everlane's timeless essentials are just what you're looking for. No frills, just quality, which is actually the title of my penis. And right now, you can check out our personalized collection at everlane.com/dingdong. Plus, you'll get free shipping on your first order. That's everlane.com/dingdong. everlane.com/dingdong. Forget what I said before about my penis.
When you experience real joy for people that you love getting stuff in this business, you quadruple the joy in your life. Like, it's really like when you, and that, like, that is why I teared up when you were like, it would have broken my heart if you said no. Cause I was like, it took me a while to get there. And I'm so touched that you're there. And I'm not, you know, it is still a fucking process. So if, like, it will change and all that. But if you choose to accept that joy, you have so much more joy in your life.
Yeah.
Because honestly, everybody is getting stuff all the time.
Yeah.
So why not love it when people you love are getting it?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
I'm just like holding myself, just like listening to all of this. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't really have anything to add. It's just, I'm just so curious about.
Well, and it's also, I'm projecting totally on
please,
you.
Please project.
But it's really scary to be the person who gets stuff. Because that's also happened to me, where I'm just like, this is terrifying and I feel all alone and I can't complain about it because I'm more successful than my friends. And I have a friend who's still a dear friend who has a hard time, you know?
Just they're in that position or they're...
Yeah, they're... No, not. She was in a position of not getting work.
Oh, got it.
And so it was really... harden our friendship because it was like, I can't share things with you because I'm constantly protecting you from kind of not a great side of your character.
Right.
And it's making you a bummer because it's also, it's not just with me that you're having this, you're having this with other friends. And it's like, it would be so much more fun if we could all just celebrate.
Right.
And then, you know, sure enough, because it does happen, not on our timelines, but it happened for her 15 years later that she's like,
yeah,
got a really big, nice thing.
There you go.
Good. There.
And she, which is great.
Yeah.
But also, how much greater would it have been if she could have enjoyed everything, all of us, every step of the way? Yes.
And you know, that's, I guess, too, that like, it just, not that tripping on acid made me see this, but I was looking, I was standing there and Sudie and I were like holding hands, looking at the fucking sky. And I was like, oh my God. It doesn't matter. Everything is so big. Like, it's just like, we are so small. Mm-hmm. And all you have is, like, joy and, like, good energy you can give other people.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, the ego doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, we're all lucky enough to be out here healthy and doing this kind of stuff. And, like, we get to, like, do this shit for
and
a
how,
check once in a while.
Yeah, and how awesome... that your friend got this.
Oh,
that
yeah.
got the recognition that he deserves. Yeah.
Period.
And it's also just a positive in the industry.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it's also like the more people we love whose work we love get stuff, the better it is for us.
Yeah.
Because that means that everything's changing.
Well, I mean, hey, don't think twice. There you go. There obviously is media to already written about
this. Isn't
that
wild that he did that? What's so crazy about that movie is so Birbiglia was not from the improv world.
Yeah,
really.
Right.
He had done like improv in college.
Right.
And then he went into stand up and did amazingly well in stand up. Like early 20s was on Letterman.
He was, oh, right.
Isn't that wild?
Oh my God.
He's such a regular guy that you forget how wildly successful
but
he is.
But it's like him and Mulaney and Kroll were all in that little Georgetown coterie where
it
really
blew up. So
yes.
Yeah.
And also the thing, difference between stand up and improv is like you kind of blow up on your own.
Totally. Which is wonderful.
So then he started doing improv again a few years ago.
And then he did that This American Life thing.
I mean, like, wasn't that it? It was like him sort of, he and Ira both started doing improv at, I think it was like at Magnet or something.
Ira started taking improv classes at Magnet. I don't know that that was connected to Birbiglia.
To Birbiglia? Okay, got it.
I don't know exactly, but Birbiglia did a show at the Del Close Marathon called Mike Birbiglia's Dream.
Yes, I remember this.
Yes.
And I wasn't there for that. Right. But then a few months later, he was like, I want to do that again. And he asked Gethard.
Cool.
And because I lost this other job that like broke my ego, I was able to go and do that with him, which was such a dream.
So cool. Okay, I want to talk about this more. So what are, I want to talk more about these examples of the end of one opportunity, just sort of like drawing a straight line to like the beginning.
Because it always does seem like you are someplace so cool. You know what I mean?
I was like, Tammy's writing for that.
The things I just listed, I was like, that's the
contemporary
pop cultural stuff for people that love television, our age, people that love comedy. Well, that's prestige stuff.
Thank you. I've been so fucking lucky. And it's also one of those things of like the narrative, you know what I mean? Always feels different than
the
like,
reality.
Totally. It feels like different than how it is on the inside. And the thing too, so that thing of drawing a straight line, that's actually a Martha Beck exercise.
Oh.
That is, have you guys ever read her?
I don't know. No. Martha Beck.
Is this like a Twyla Tharp, like an Artist's Way type of thing?
Yes.
Or?
Yes.
I need it.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Steering by Starlight, Find Your North Star. Can't recommend it enough.
Wow.
Can't recommend it enough. Soul. Oh my God. Soul. She has so many amazing exercises. So one of them is like, think of a time that you were so incredibly happy and fulfilled and like yourself and you know what I mean? Like, and pick now a time that you were the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can draw that straight line between how one thing led to the other.
Whoa.
That's so interesting.
And once you do that exercise, you're like, oh my God, I did not even see that. Mm-hmm. And it's 100% true. She also has this really cool exercise called Shackles On, Shackles Off.
What is this?
Okay, so this feeling of, and it's hard to get yourself to do because you're like, well, I don't, because it makes you feel bad, but it's like a meditative thing where you have to think of like a time in your life and like really do it and like close your eyes and feel it in your body where you felt like you didn't belong, you felt, you know, like nobody got you, where you felt terrible about yourself and all that, and really go there and really feel it in your body and do that thing of like, how does my head feel? How does my neck feel? You know what I mean? Like really find that feeling in your body and then shake it off and then do the same thing with like a great time where you felt most and like really feel that in your body.
Shackles off,
Yep, and that shackles off. And then when you are trying to decide something, like how it, something makes you feel, because it gets so convoluted. She's like, is this a shackles on or shackles off feeling and really going to your body?
That's really good.
Wow. Yeah.
And because it really is that simple.
It is, but it's hard to make yourself do.
Yeah.
Because it's also complicated, because there's also, sometimes it's not just a thing, it's a relationship. And you're like, how does this relationship make me feel?
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah. I mean, you've talked, again, listened to hundreds of hours of you, but like your relationship with Henry, again, we've literally just really met like
go
an
there,
hour
though.
Ago. But it sounds like he's a beautiful person.
He is.
That, and I only know that from you. But like you've also talked about like that was a relationship that was over months before it was over.
Yeah.
And how hard it is to let go of that. And like, it's really terrifying to look at something with somebody that you love that's still in your body. You're like, the dynamic as it is now is not right.
Right.
And that's so scary to look at.
Well, I think that what I've learned is that loving someone and having that person be right for you are mutual. They are mutually exclusive. Or they're not mutually exclusive.
Say that again.
They're not the same thing.
They're not the same thing.
Right.
So that's what's so hard about it, is knowing, wow, I'm not good for this person. This person's not good for me. Unfortunately, I love them like family.
Yeah.
And then I said recently, like I actually said this on Catherine and Pat's podcast. I said, it's this thing that's happened over the past like 8 months, which inconveniently enough, it's happened over the past 8 months when I was dealing with a lot of other stuff it's like, you really have to move on from this relationship. I had to tell myself, like, cause I had not. And, he sort of moved on. And, so I was like, wow, it's like this feeling that you have to actively decide to just put away. You know what I mean? It's this thing that's never going to, because it's like something in the world. That feeling already takes up space. And so it's never going to not take up space, but you have to decide to take it and like put it in the back of the closet. And maybe you don't shut the door of the closet. Maybe the doors will open, but whatever. But you do have to just put it away. But that feeling for someone else doesn't go away. And that's what's hard.
But it's like,
and
it's
something I never understood.
It's meditation. It's like what thoughts that you like, it's letting the thoughts go by, or it's that old like Native American thing, the two wolves.
Oh, no. I was just responding to you linking this back to this meditative practice of just letting something go.
Yeah. Where you're like, oh, just because I have a thought, I don't have to dwell in it.
Totally.
It's just going to go by like a car in the road.
Right. I mean, if you're talking in these terms, Matt, of putting something away in a closet, if you're like giving it some vague like temporal thing, like that, like I think that just means that you're displacing that feeling and you're going to address it later on. This sounds so abstract, but like just, I mean, I feel like letting it just go and dropping it completely, just not caring where it lands, mm-hmm. might be like, just see how that feels.
Because there's also something so loaded about saying I'm putting it in a closet, mm-hmm, especially
given
your experience of a closet.
With the closet, you're right, even that imagery. I will say this, you know what I've discovered? Muting on Instagram.
Yeah.
Muting on Instagram has saved my life a little bit. Because I tweeted to all the boys I've muted on Instagram.
Oh.
Like, I'm just kind of like, if I get like an obsessive feeling about like someone, I mute them.
Yeah.
If somebody hurts me, I mute them. If someone's not good for me, I just mute them. And it's crazy that social media even has this power. And I was talking about feeling a little depressed a couple months ago, and Sudi was like, it's social media, I think. Especially like when you start to get a little bit more attention, it's exciting because social media is like, hi, like we're all looking. And then it's like, whoa, that's also not real. And mm-hmm. it heightens all these kinds mm-hmm. of emotions that you would ordinarily have. So the muting has been big.
My friend and I, we talked about it like Big Macs, where mm-hmm. it like feels really good. And then you feel like hell.
Hell.
It's Big Macs. Yeah.
It's Big Macs. And it's, yeah.
It's Big Macs is the title
of that. Yeah. It's Big Macs. Okay, you mentioned earlier that a lot of times the narrative doesn't match up with what's going on the inside. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to get into too much detail. What's like for you when someone comes up to you and says, "Oh my God, Tammy, what an amazing sort of resume, what a background, what a pedigree." Like, I mean, what is the thing that you're dying to tell to like
the
sort
personal
of,
highlight out of debunk. The stuff that you've done?
Or that too.
I was going a positive direction.
Sorry, I was, yeah. But yeah, no, go positive. Sorry, yeah. Don't listen to me.
No. I'm not sure what I would say.
Yeah,
personal highlight.
I'm not sure what I would say for personal highlight. Like, honestly, probably personal highlight is some improv shows that I've done.
Ooh.
You're also one of the best.
Really kind, but getting to like, there's some like shows that I've done where I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like that felt moving, and that felt moving for those of us on stage and mm-hmm. for those of us in the audience. And I also love how ethereal it is.
Mm.
I love that it's fully gone and
it's
just
for us in the moment.
Yeah, I do love that. And in terms of like what, it's funny, people say like, looking at the resume, it feels a little like social media to me, where it's like you have a very specific idea of what my life has felt like because you've seen the jobs. Yeah. But it's, you know, you don't see the 8 months where I wasn't working and didn't know where the next job would be and like how terrifying that was.
Yeah.
Or also like, it's funny, like, and we do it ourselves in our lives, but like looking back at my 20s, I'm like, oh my God, that was the best. But I remember being in my 20s and being like, what the fuck is happening?
I
and I don't know what my job is gonna be and all that. And like, where you're just like, oh, but it was so great because it was just about the joy of it. And you're no, there was so much fear and uncertainty.
Totally. It's very rose colored glasses. Like, but I mean, you sort of can't help but have that weird misty-eyed thing about it. It's like, oh, it was this formative thing, but you didn't know it back then.
But I definitely try to then turn it back onto what I'm doing now. Like, especially when I'm feeling like, then I definitely try to be like, Tammy of how many years ago, how would she feel like that, yes, that she gets totally, to do this and totally, like getting that attitude of gratitude.
Yeah, that is a huge exercise, I think, where it's like whenever I start to feel really bad, I'm like, hold on a second. And I actually, like, this is maybe sounds a little gross, but sometimes I will list the things I've accomplished.
Not
just
gross,
for my, just
at
for
all,
myself.
Fully healthy.
And I look at it and I'm like, fuck yeah. Yeah. Like, I did so many other things I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, like, it's like when I was like, you guys are the future of comedy. No, you're just comedy. I'm just the end of comedy. But like,
no,
I do feel like, I do feel like such a, like, a kinship to you guys, yeah, and yeah, like to you, like how I was in my 20s. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, I mean, I've been, I like, this is so crazy, but like when we had Fran Gillespie on the show, I said to her, I was like, you were the improviser that I used to seek out. You know what I mean? Like when I was going to UCB classes, and there was also you. I mean, I remember Tammy, Adie, and Spo. That was one of my favorite shows that I had seen.
Tammy,
Adie,
and Spo. And then Tammy and Spo did a like a two-prof show like a couple years back at DCM, right? Or was it Tammy? Was it always Tammy, Adie, and Spo?
It was Tammy and Shannon have friends. And so
Tammy
then
and Shannon, Shannon have friends.
Yes, yes,
yes,
yes,
yes, yes. Okay, so that was just so great. And like, and just, it's crazy to even be... like that my friends, that I'm friends with Brandon Scott Jones. You know what, yeah, I mean?
I,
like,
totally get it.
That I'm friends with Josh Harbin, Aaron Jackson. You know what I mean? It's just like, and I think they would like roll their eyes and say, okay, bitch, and me saying that. But like, really, that's those things that is meaningful. I mean, and you guys and like all those people are the people that inspired, I know, us to, yeah, even do what we felt was like in our hearts to do in comedy.
But
you know what I mean?
It's by doing what you guys feel in your hearts, like this podcast feels so true, and that's like what people respond to, and that's like why I do feel like Kelly Clarkson is gonna be on.
She'll
you know
be
what
on.
I mean, like that's how it's gonna happen.
Can I tell you why I think I love her so much, and I know why. It's because she broke out. I think I've told you this. When she like broke out, I was 12, and so I think I had just realized I was gay at 11. When did you realize you were gay?
Oh, I can't put a time to it.
That's so funny.
Well,
I,
you
can,
try,
I can remember the
also
moment.
You if, I don't things. Know that you've ever talked about conversion therapy on the podcast.
Not on the main
not
podcast.
On the main pod. Yeah,
wait, what's the non-main pod?
There's our
Patreon. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I've done the
so
Patreon
are you still
stuff.
Not gonna talk about it?
No, I'm happy to talk about you guys. It's a Patreon exclusive.
Well,
talking
the
about
thing is
because
like, we do the RuPaul's Drag Race recaps on Patreon.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And a contestant this year, Dusty Ray Bottoms, talked in depth about going through conversion,
yes,
therapy.
Wow.
Yes.
And so when we were reviewing that episode, Bowen did detail a little bit of his
experience.
I detailed
it. But yeah, and it's so funny because it was something that I thought I had like rear view mirrored behind me for all these years. I was like, I'm so past that. I'm living
but
out loud.
How did
as a
it man. Happen?
So it was the first sort of outing, which wasn't even an outing. It was just my parents finding this like saucy like IM transcript, and then
with who?
With just some random guy in,
on the internet.
Just,
it was a gay robot.
It was a gay robot.
Essentially,
it might as well have been. And then so they found that. And it was just like 2 weeks of just coming home to like my parents like crying, us all crying at the dinner table. I'd only seen my dad cry once before this when my grandpa died, and then I would just come home to him crying every day. And it was like, what? I was like, I was, and then eventually you're just like, I have to fix this. Mm-hmm. And so you'll do anything.
Feel a responsibility.
Totally. And then my parents. Just having this sort of gap in cultural understanding, which I don't begrudge them for at all. They were just like, well, this is a problem, and what do? We fix it.
Mm-hmm. P.S. There's plenty of Native American, not Native Americans, uh-huh. white Americans.
Who do the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So
totally.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they found this, we grew up in Denver, they found this guy in Colorado Springs who went by an alias and who, like, had a very sort of...
Why did he go by an alias?
Because they constantly get harassed by, like, activist groups and all that
that
stuff.
Are trying to do the right thing and shut this thing.
I yeah. love that he is cloaked
he's
in
the victim.
Shame.
Yes, yes,
he's
yes.
in himself closeted.
He's literally cloaked in shame doing this thing where
well,
he's telling adding shame.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
There are so many layers of shame to this because, but anyway, he was in Colorado Springs, like where Focus on the Family is, like all these like mega churches are super religious, religiously fertile place.
And is your older sister, is she like off in college at this
she's
point?
She's off in college at this point. She's trying to, and Yang, I think she's listening. She's trying to sort of straddle the line and sort of play to both sides. And she, I don't give her the credit, but she really
had to moderate and mediate a lot of stuff back then.
And from far away.
From far away, yeah. She was doing something like...
And having her own formative experiences in college. I'm
totally.
Sure.
Like she, you know, for her to sort of be like, you know, sort of lured into this other
but
thing.
But that's so like, it's, I think it's very different being Chinese.
Yes.
But being Israeli and like uh-huh. we moved when I was 3 and my yeah. brother was 13 and my sister was 8. Mm-hmm, like it's mm-hmm. also like you feel like your siblings are the only ones who really get it
totally.
With your parents.
Totally.
And so even like when my parents were being wrong, I still fundamentally felt like they were being right.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's also like I would be surrounded by people being like, that's insane. That's ridiculous. And being like, well, but you have to see it from their point of view.
Right.
So that's where a sibling really comes in because they see it from their point of view.
That's essentially what she did. And then at first my response was to lash out and be like, how can you like how can you sort of not pick a side? Like, how can you try to understand them?
Because you're
your dad crying.
Because you're the one who's in pain.
I'm the one. Yeah.
But it's
totally.
Also.
But so are they.
So are they.
So are they.
And it's so unbearable.
So yeah. Watch. So just would you know, drive an hour and a half each way with my dad. And then those were, I mean, those were actually bonding experiences between me and my dad, weirdly. Wow. Where we would just have like conversations that had nothing to do with.
But it's like 3 hours of one-on-one car time.
Which is like, you know, fraught and whatever. But
wow.
That wasn't even, I mean, that was like the highlight of the whole thing. Because the sessions themselves were just, I mean, they started out as just plain old therapy, like talk therapy.
With somebody stuff. With a really fucked up agenda.
Totally. Someone with like, you know, quacky diplomas on the wall. And then by the end, that was when he started this exercise of just let's walk through all these different times you felt attracted towards a man. How did you feel in your body? He would just try to apply these. Like,
oh, God.
Other, just like, didn't you feel terrible about yourself while you were attracted to this person? That's
my
what
God.
That's what the source is. And then by the end.
Yes. When in your adolescence do you feel anything sexual and not feel
and not feel
yeah,
horrible.
Crazy already?
Totally. And then
yes, that's true for everybody.
That's true for everyone. And then the last session was when he was just trying to like just like give me some parting wisdom about the whole experience.
Wait, so was there like we're going to do 20 sessions or was it like
it was limited because the time. Timing of it was I was going to college immediately after this.
Oh
this is the
God.
Summer before college. Summer before NYU.
Getting you all closeted for NYU. Such a shame.
And your parents just being like, oh my God, we have to do this.
Well, yeah. And then, but the NYU thing came out of, and it's so funny that just everything that's happening now is sort of like a result of that, is butterfly affected out of that. But is my sister was already at NYU.
Oh.
So she was sort of the watchful eye, and that's like another thing that like she was foisted with and
oh,
that we
God.
Haven't talked about, but anyway,
you need to do acid with her.
I need to do acid with her. Yay.
She's a mom. I don't know,
she's a mom, but we'll find a sitter. But she
she's not breastfeeding anymore.
No, totally. But the last session he just tries to like he just starts going into this anecdote about a former patient of his,
i.e. him,
who he narrates in the third person. He was like, so this guy is driving down the highway in California, gets off at San Bernardino. It's 2 a.m. He stops by a Denny's and then he looks up and the waiter's there and the waiter starts making eyes at him. And then he switches to the first person. And then he's like, and I was like, am I really going to have sex with this guy? Like starts to sort of, and then catches himself like mid story being like, oh, I just outed myself.
Oh my God!
He was like, this was a couple of months ago, and like,
this is a couple of months ago.
Like this is a couple of months before this last session with him.
Yeah, he said this had just happened.
This had just happened, and then it was like very obvious to me that I was like, oh, this is all a fucking sham.
Yeah.
So thank God you got that little peek.
Totally.
Where you're like, this is, does not work.
Does not work, and even the person who is administering this kind of quote unquote treatment. That I
literally
sought,
fuck
I sought
boy
treatment.
Erased. We need this movie.
Oh, stop! And then
1,000,000% like that. Honestly, I was just like, you got to write this. You got to write this.
Oh my God!
Write this.
I don't know.
You
got
to write this. And you will one day. You will one day.
One day.
Absolutely.
And the best part was after, like, my dad had very politely been like, if you have any sort of referrals for people who do this in New York, we would love that. And then the funniest, to me, this is the funniest thing in the world. After our session ends, we're saying our goodbyes, and then he pulls out this sheet of paper and he goes, so these are the names I was able to find of people who do this in New York, but you know, it's not a lot of people, and the closest person is in New Haven, you know, like some like Connecticut town, like 50 miles away. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is, we're not going to keep this going because people don't do this, like, in New York, and they just don't do this in general, like, he was, I don't know, and
no wonder there was no one in New York, because you wouldn't be able to, A, keep that practice running in New York, totally. And B, like, you're exposed to the but fucking right things.
What's so terrifying to me about, like, okay, that's so obvious and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm, and then mm-hmm. It's our fucking vice president.
Yeah.
Is somebody right. who yeah. absolutely believes in it and puts money totally. Into it. And you're just like.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, that's the whole sort
so
of
So when did you
it.
Come out to your parents for real? And we're like.
For real? This was beginning of senior year of college. So it was like me kind of going back into the closet. After my sister graduates that semester, I come out to all my friends, like i.e. Matt and the rest of the comedy people at NYU, and then spent about a year and a half closeted again, mm-hmm. Or closeted to my parents, but out to everyone else, and then that sort of...
I remember when you even came out at college, it was like something you had said, but like it was like we were to take it with a grain of salt. It felt like that.
Really?
It was like not confirmed information.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Like it was like, we had heard that he had come out and went back in the closet before, and this is not when we were as close as we are now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is when you were fighting over that girl.
This is when
that Sherman. Poor girl.
Yeah, I know.
That poor girl is like...
Oh my gosh.
Just like, I have no one in my life.
No, she's doing great.
But I met you. I met you when we were both quote unquote straight.
Right.
And then you were, I was gay first and then you were gay. But we were told that you had been also gay 2 years before and then you went back into the closet. And so no one was really could be sure.
Oh my God, that's so college.
Funny.
I don't know if I can trust him. Oh my God, it's so college.
It's so college.
Wait, we have to ask Tammy the question. We haven't even asked Tammy the question.
Let me put my button on what I said before, which was the reason I liked Kelly Clarkson is because being 12, I saw someone, America fall in love with someone for being who they were. And
yes.
I thought, wow, yeah. Maybe someday someone will fall in love with me for who I am.
Oh.
And so then I was like, well, not yet. But maybe one day I'll come out of the closet and then I can be Kelly Clarkson levels of beloved.
But you saw her and you hung that hope on her in a way.
She was huge for me because yeah. I just saw like America fall in love with her. And she seemed like... You know, at the time, I think I was very easily manipulated by that shit, but it's like she was the perfect George W. Bush era girl next door.
But she wasn't, because she was also being told nonstop she was too big.
Yeah.
Like by the gatekeepers, by yes. Simon Cowell. It very easily felt like it could be Justin Guarini. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Oh, sure. I think I wouldn't have been surprised either way, but I think, I mean, if it is rigged, which I'm sure those shows are. I think they made the right, quote unquote, right decision. I think that the reason she's been so lasting is because I think there's an entire generation of women who look at her and they say, you know what? I don't have like a stick thin physique. My weight fluctuates. And I think a lot of gay men do attach to her because I think at a very formative time, like, she was like relentlessly herself and her personality, and I think everyone kind of just like really gravitated towards that. She's just authentic in a way, and also obviously incredibly supernaturally talented.
But I do feel like that authenticity, even more than the fans that it attracts, because as you are seeing on social media, people liking you is a fickle fucking beast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And will change, and you just cannot. It's like a, I think it's an Al-Anon thing that my friend said to me, was like, other people's opinions of you are none of your business.
Doesn't matter.
Wow.
And I was like, wait, but it's literally my business. And she's yeah. like, it's really not. You yeah. think it is. It's literally none of your business. Yeah. And you can lose your mind about it.
Oh my God.
But like her being authentically herself, I feel like, is what has made her be consistently able to make music.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? And whether or not people like the music is...
And she'll always remind you how good she is. Like, that's the thing, is it's like, she's never going to stay in the limelight because of a stunt she pulled. She's going to stay in the limelight because she gave an amazing performance on some show. You know what I mean? Or like, that's the thing, is it's like, it feels like every 3 years, like, she has like a viral moment. Like when she sang it at Obama's second inauguration. My Country 'Tis of Thee. It was like just so unbelievable. And that's more famous for being the
I
time.
Love it because I don't remember it at all. I don't remember hearing about it. And you're like, everybody knows.
Well, no, first of all, I'm happy to put the spotlight back on it because go check out that performance.
Everybody
it was
remembers.
A slay.
Everybody Nobody's remembers. Thinking about Beyonce performing at no, that inauguration.
Beyonce, that was the one where she famously lip synced to the national anthem and Kelly sang live.
Oh my God. You're really going to.
I'm sorry, but it's true. It's not a jab. It's just people remember it for being that. But also, that was a moment for Kelly Clarkson as well.
People remember.
Oh my gosh. So it also, like, having just seen Larry Owens perform and, like, starting to cry just as he's about to go on stage, I was like, what is it about this? And it's like, oh, it's because talent will out. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and it's not even about, like, what other people say. It's like how much I've internalized that shit.
Yes.
And just, like, I feel like Kelly Clarkson, I'm sure she internalized shit, but she also didn't let it shut her up.
Yeah.
And
that's, she is huge. Outspoken, too.
Very outspoken.
Let's ask the question.
Tammy Sager, what was the culture that made you say culture is for me?
Honestly, Second City, because we saw it when I was a kid. Like, I grew up in Chicago.
You grew up with it.
Yeah. We grew up, and my parents would go to Second City, and this is at the time where, like, you'd go, and they would sort of decide where you sit.
Uh-huh.
And my mom would fully lie about not being able to hear well. So we'd sit right up front.
Yes.
I was way too young. I saw Steve Carell.
Wow.
And Bonnie Hunt and Dan Castellaneta.
Dan Castellaneta, too.
Yeah, oh, Mary Gross. God. So, like, Tim Kazurinsky, like, since I was a little kid.
Wow.
And oh did God. Not understand most of this stuff. But no, I fully remember seeing Steve Carell and Steve Colbert were in a show together.
Oh my God. Wow. Where they did the waiter bit, maybe? Or was that before or after that? Anyway.
That's so amazing.
I don't
incredible.
Remember the waiter bit.
The waiter bit where they're just like, they for some, like, they're explaining the specials of the night, and they just, for some reason, it makes them super nauseous, so they're like so they're just like on the verge of vomiting as they're describing
that's
these,
so
like,
funny. I don't remember that.
It's so funny. But wait, that's, oh my God, so what was the biggest difference between, okay, we'll talk about,
but also I have to say, like, seeing Second City and being like, and this is also when people in Second City weren't blowing up,
sure,
like, even like, maybe they'd get SNL, maybe. Like, that was the biggest thing, but it wasn't like Judd Apatow times.
Totally.
So I remember seeing Steve Carell and being like, oh, that's so sad. He's never going to be anything because he's so talented.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, he's on the Dana Carvey show that doesn't last, you know, more than a minute. And then it was like when he fucking got 40-Year-Old Virgin or even like when Anchorman happened. Oh.
Wait a minute.
Oh, so yeah.
And then you were pretty much ingrained in that system at that point. Maybe?
Not even. Like, so I was a math major at U of C, and, like, I really didn't see how it was going to happen. But then I did, I wrote a paper about improv, and, so then I got into the improv group there, and that's when I was like, I love this so much.
Wow. Tammy, I mean, you are basically... I totally spaced. I knew you were a math major at U of C, but I totally spaced on just this... the trajectory being like not necessarily a straight line either.
It
for
didn't
you
feel like, and it didn't feel like I would ever get anything, and it also felt like, I remember when I was like, I'm gonna submit to some shows, and like somebody from Daily Show had like fully told the producer, and I was on main stage, you know, which is like the highest that you can get, and like said, like, we're looking for writers, and the producer there didn't, he decided who he wanted to tell to submit, and I wasn't one of the people.
Wow.
But I, you know, like, and this is what I haven't taught a ton, but when I have taught, I've always been like, don't worry about impressing me. There's a million people that I'm trying to bring up right now. But I'm like, but everything that I've gotten has been through people that I've come up with.
Yeah.
Alison Silverman, who's a brilliant writer and, you know, one of the, you know, original people at Colbert, but she was at the Daily Show and she worked there, and she got that, who knows, I still don't quite understand how she got it, because she got it from like working on like You Don't Know Jack, a game show on
we just played You Don't Know Jack last night with Pat.
Oh my gosh,
the newest one, the fifth one. Sorry.
So she worked on that as like a video game, and especially in Chicago at that time felt like you were nowhere. And I was like, how did you get the Daily Show? And she's like, you know, there's certain types of year that you submit. I'll tell you when. She told me when, and it was like, I got that job offer, but I also then got the job offer at Mad TV.
Right.
And then I chose Mad TV, which I'm still like, okay, I did that.
I love that.
But it was also I didn't fundamentally want to write sketch or jokes.
Yes.
I wanted to write longer narrative stuff. And it was very hard decision. I had that like 24 hours of like, what am I going to do?
Sure.
And then, and then I decided to go. It was also, this is how long ago it was, but it was before Daily Show was union.
Right. Oh.
It was pre 9/11.
Wow. And that TV was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And it became, I mean, it's Comedy Central, but it became union very soon thereafter.
Got it. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm curious about what was the gap between you graduating college with a math degree and you thinking, I'm going to do this comedy thing?
It's weird because I got hired for something called Boom Chicago, which is
Was that Amsterdam?
God.
Yes.
Was this close to going? I was like in a final callback for that.
Oh my God.
I thought this might have been the thing. That was like 4 years ago. Yeah, it's so funny. I didn't know that you did that.
I did.
Oh, wow. What was that experience like?
It was really good. It was the third year, so it wasn't even year round. Like now they like sign people for several year long contracts.
Right. Yeah, it was a 2 year thing. It was like a 2 year commitment.
Crap.
Yeah.
Mine was like 7 months.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was like you fully had to go and hand out newspapers that like advertising the show. Like you had to do 2 hours. It's called Cronting for every show you did.
God.
And I was so bad at it that I ended up like doing bookkeeping. Like, can I do this? But I got it while I was still in college.
Wow, great.
And it actually was the beginning of turning things around with my dad because things were really bad. Uh-huh. With my dad, and I got this. I wasn't supposed to. We had this fucked up agreement where I wasn't supposed to do any theater.
Wow.
And it was, but at this point, then I was in therapy. Mm-hmm. And my therapist, we had gone to therapy with my parents and me, and then it was just turned into therapy with me. So then it was like she kind of had this role of like she knew my parents.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to spend the whole time defending them. Did that make sense?
And explaining what the dynamics was.
So we had this fucked up agreement where I could live not at home as long as I did not do any theater, which included even taking like a class.
Wow.
And she was just like, yeah, they just want you to lie. Like they've set up a situation where you lie. And I was like, okay. So I performed under the ridiculous stage name of Sadie Cohen because I was like, everyone.
Sadie Cohen.
Title up
Sadie Cohen.
And like, P.S. like I needed a stage name. But I got this job.
Yeah.
And it meant like, oh shit, I'm going to have to go to Amsterdam. I'm going to have to leave college before I graduate. And I remember calling my brother, who's 10 years older than me, and being like, how do I do this? Because what I was going to do is just call and be like, I got this. I'm going.
Yeah.
Bye.
Wow.
And he was like, instead of asking Abba for permission, ask him what he thinks.
Okay.
Like, not asking for permission. I'm asking for, like, advice. And so I did.
Wow.
And it wasn't like, can I do this? It was like, hey, this happened. Didn't get into the details of all the auditions that I should not have been doing.
Yeah. Right.
And.
Or what a selective process that is anyway.
Yeah. And also he couldn't understand that it was like a real.
Well, again, this is how long ago it was. It was like when there was this book called Let's Go, like Let's Go Europe.
Uh-huh,
and they had just had a shout out in Let's Go Europe. So it was like this like.
Yeah, it was a real thing.
Prestige thing. Yeah.
And so he was like, okay, let me think, you know.
Mm.
And then he came to the conclusion like I should go.
Wow.
Which was like, okay, well, I'm going anyway.
Like, so who was there while you were there?
So this was before Seth Meyers.
Yeah,
like
before,
he went the year before. He went the year after. I should say.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
Oh my
That's
God.
Crazy. He's one of the ones they say now. You're like, and Seth Meyers did.
Oh
it.
No, that like, he was the one who broke it open for like everybody.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But then coming back from that, you know, and also I started college young and I'm born in December. So I was there at like 20.
Wow.
So even though I'd like taken time off from school and graduated, like it all ended up being. Okay, and then I got back and I got Second City within a couple of months.
Right, amazing. Because at that point they knew like you had been real seasoned by.
You can just tell on the audition. You can just tell that somebody's like
ready
been on
it.
Stage.
Yeah.
And
that's so cool.
So I really was really lucky. So I just came back and I just finished up school. I just had like a class.
Yeah.
So I finished up and had a gig.
Great, but you finished up just and graduated with the degree.
Yeah.
Great, amazing. I mean, not that like either
no,
way.
No,
would have been
but
fine,
I was.
But...
No, I didn't have high school diploma, so it was important that I get a college diploma.
So cool. I mean, a math major at University of Chicago would have, a math degree from University of Chicago would have made my dad like,
oh my God, I can't even tell you how much I understand all of that stuff. And like seeing a fucking father cry.
It's a very similar.
Totally. It is. It is.
Trajectory.
It's, you know.
Yeah.
It's intense. An immigrant father crying is like,
oh,
oh my God.
Something happened.
When you know how much they've sacrificed.
Oh, yeah. And this is the thing. Okay. And just to really quickly loop it back to like the parental thing with the conversion therapy thing. I'm reading Joy Luck Club right now. It's all about mothers and daughters and forgiving each other mm-hmm. and daughters forgiving their mothers about wrongs yes. and the other way around. Mm-hmm. It's the most beautiful thing. Just to like not care. I truly don't hold it against them.
And it takes a long time to get to that place.
Took me
too.
So long to get yeah. to that place because for a while I even wrote a terrible solo show about this. I did try to write this in some sort
it was not terrible.
It wasn't great.
It was a reflection of where you were at. Yeah.
It was too soon and there were no jokes. It was not a it was part of a comedy solo show festival and it was just no jokes, devoid of jokes. But
I would say there could have been more jokes.
Sure, there you go.
I don't know if there were none.
Very
but as
diplomatic.
Larry would say, it was still hilarious, even though you had no jokes.
He still trusted me on stage.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah, I mean, at that point, I hadn't forgiven them. And now it's like, oh, I read the Joy Luck Club.
And the audience can tell. You
yeah,
know what I
yeah.
mean? The audience can tell when you've forgiven. And
yes.
they don't, it doesn't, they're not, they're uncomfortable when
yes.
we're uncomfortable.
When we're uncomfortable. It's chilly.
Yeah,
they're chilled. Tammy, I have to ask you before we move on. I don't think.
And
so
then
many.
I have to ask you as well.
Okay, I really want to know.
Me.
So I just really want to know, Tammy. What is like say your, just writer creator of your own show. What is that? Because I'm so curious to know this. Just having this such a diverse, like granularly diverse sort of resume, and not to like. Bring that back up, but like I am so curious to know like what like the Tammy Sager sort of
yes
imprimatur is.
I don't know.
Cool.
And it's actually been like a real like sticking point. And I recently and I'll talk to you guys about this off pod because mm-hmm. you're connected to it, funnily enough.
Oh.
But like when I feel like I have no ideas, it is such a dark, dark feeling. But like right yeah. now I just don't care about my
That's
story. Do you know what I mean? And it's also just like I just it's that time where I'm like, I care about some other people's stories. And so I've been listening to something. I'm like, oh, I think this is a show.
Got it.
But I don't know what my show is.
I'm not even necessarily asking like, what is the Tammy Sager
no,
show?
No, no, I know what you
right,
mean.
Right, right, right.
But even this, where
yeah,
I'm like, this
it.
Is a show that I feel like I could run with these
uh-huh,
and
uh-huh.
I'm inspired by these people. But like, I don't even know.
That's fine. That's, it's okay. I mean, I thought like during this break from SNL that I would have all these ideas and I would work on all this stuff and like whatever, like I have all these premises thought out, but like didn't even feel compelled to like put pen to paper.
No, you gotta
know.
Fill
That's
the well
been,
sometimes.
I think the scary thing about like the past like maybe even not year, like past like 8 months for me is just like I've always every year just always spit out so much creative stuff. Like you know me.
I know you.
Like and
He's
like I'm
shame.
Always creating and this year and this kind of like last 8 months, I think because I have a lot of stuff personally going on. It's just so much going on up here. And I think that's why I need a therapist. I haven't created as much. And that's got me in such like a funk.
You need to fill the well. That's what Tammy
said. Yeah, fill
yeah.
the well.
Yeah, and also stop beating yourself up for like
How
what your
that?
Perceived production is. Because
How about
it's
that?
Also like, as somebody who listens, I'm like, you're producing all the time.
Well, that's another other thing. It's just like we sat around the table at our acid trip and they were like, everyone say one good thing. That you're proud of over the past year. And they all went around and it was coming to me and I was like, oh my God, I have nothing to say. I don't know what to say.
But it's not true.
I have nothing to say. And then I just started crying.
Of course.
I was like, oh no. And then literally as I was there, I was like, wait, hold on a second. Like, this is classic me like killing myself for no reason.
But that's also why it's great that you're with people who love you, who know you, who
yeah.
can be like mm-hmm. this and also this and also this.
It was yeah. important. It's just like, I shout out to everyone as much as I can. It's like, go easy on yourself, y'all. We're all trying our best.
And do drugs.
And that's what we do. Oh my God, I would never. No, the thing is, like, I also really don't think that's like, I feel weird about saying this. I was just like, because we're so honest on this podcast. Sometimes I'm like, when is too honest? But I'm like, you don't need to do drugs to get there, people.
Don't, yeah.
Oh, no. And I don't. You know what I mean? Like, and actually, like, me getting high shut me down so hard.
Yeah, I think totally. That there, I think there's also something to that.
Yeah, yeah. So no, I just think there's no blanket thing for anybody.
No, yeah, it's very true. Well, what's your have to ask?
Oh, here's what I have to ask. What was Katherine Heigl like?
Oh, my God. Okay, so I've wanted to tell you this.
Yeah.
That, this and also the... Oh, I have two things to tell you. That and also about Tyra Banks.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, my God, okay. Yes.
Katherine Heigl was a fucking delight.
Yes.
And I bet she was.
She was loved on set, like... Whatever, yeah. I was there for a matter of hours. But like, Judd loved her. Like, yeah. She was a delight. This was the first time I'd filmed anything.
Yeah.
So cool. I fully yelled my lines because they were in the other room. So I was like, it's fine. And I was just like, she was like, I felt like she was whispering to me. And then I was like fully projecting so they could hear me. And then Judd came in. He was just like, just a little smaller. And I was like, oh, he means just like whisper, just like, so then I just like concentrate on talking really quiet.
Honestly.
Like
that was
screen acting is just talking quietly.
Oh my God. Alec Baldwin like straight up just whispers.
Right, that's what Tina says too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
In Bossy Pants, she's like, he just like speaks at a low whisper in a low decibel. And then you're like, oh, but it's all there.
Yeah. Like that's part of it too, where you're just like, because especially as a live performer, you're like, oh, okay, well, I'm selling
it.
It's
time to perform. Yeah.
And it's like all those instincts, just shut it down and just like trust that your eyes. Yeah. Well, just be is hard because then you're just like, I'm really big and like just be.
Same. I'm big too.
No, but then it's like, if you just concentrate on talking really quietly, like it all just sort of happens.
It just happened right now.
Yeah, right. You just like, it's weird.
I got pulled in. I was like, whoa.
Well, yeah. I know. It's so, but it was like, if you just told me like to be small or whatever, I'd be like, I can't. But if you're just like, just
so
like,
she
just
was,
like
she was a delight. She was loved on set.
She was loved on set. She was a delight. And then it was such a bummer when that came out. Because
honestly,
I remember, because you
really
guys were just talking about it, because it was also like, it wasn't like a few months after it came out, she was like, oh, it would have been cool if my, it was like opening weekend. She was like, it was a bummer and all this. And I was like, oh, dude.
The timing was
here's
off.
What I think. I think she could have, I think a bunch of things could have happened. She could have waited to maybe express that particular opinion, even if it was justified.
Right.
I think everyone could have maybe read that whole article because there is context involved.
I'm so not with you on this.
I think that Judd and Seth were way too harsh on her.
They were not, though, at the time. At the time, they really handled it graciously.
You think?
100%.
They're still
talking
about it like as of recently, though.
Well,
I think that's.
I feel like people ask them about it.
Yeah,
sure.
That's true.
But also consider how much fucking work that they did.
Yeah.
Mm. Like when you're directing and writing a movie and like, as somebody who's fully acted in like 1.5 things, but like it's so much easier.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
And it's like she got to come in and be a star of a movie that the other star was like hustling and writing and
You're
doing
right.
all this work
yep.
when the director is doing, and he's also like throwing all this stuff out and then in editing for a million months.
It was their baby.
They have done so much more work.
Yeah.
And then she gets to be a fucking movie star off of it.
Yeah.
And
she won an Emmy basically for that movie. She didn't win for that season of Grey's Anatomy, I'll tell you.
She wore because the buzz had been such a groundswell.
Buzz had hit and it was time to award her.
But
she benefited from that movie in huge ways.
And then the thing that really sells me of like, dude, this is on Catherine, not on them at all, is what she fucking did to the writers of Grey's.
You're right.
That was
very revealing.
That was trash.
That was
trash. But I'll say this.
But were you the one who were like, I love that she took herself out of consideration?
Well,
you thought she was being generous.
I thought she was doing what, because when I was, that was
also,
like,
you don't have to announce it. You just do it.
Just do it.
Just
you
do
know,
it.
Some people do this, where if they win the next season, they will,
they'll pull themselves out of
consideration. But oftentimes,
totally unceremoniously.
Especially on a show like Grey's Anatomy, where there's many other actresses that are deserving of and often nominated for that very same award. And so I thought to myself when it was announced that she was removing herself from consideration,
she's being kind to
Sandra Oh and Chandra Wilson, who, and at the time Kate Walsh, who really could have won that award.
And she could have come in on that angle. She could have totally been like,
absolutely, but she
never
had to be nasty.
Totally.
She had to be nasty. And you can tell that was when I was like, oh, maybe now the knocked up thing does seem weird.
And also, like, who is she being nasty to? Do you know what I mean? Because, like, also when she
is... The people who bust their ass to write for her, which sucks.
Yeah, who bust their ass, like, 6 days a week when she's working what, 3 days a week? Oh, and like, yeah. I know the single cam life is hard. Writer's life is longer hours.
There you go.
And you're not getting anything for free and you're not getting your photo taken and all that.
I mean,
and like,
yeah.
To do that to them after they got you an Emmy, it's just so shitty.
It's crazy. I wasn't given the material to warrant a nomination.
Like,
that's
nobody
just
asked
so...
you.
And also,
how
it's like, on a show like that where they're trying to write for like 12 cast members.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the things that they must have done. And like, how much did she get from getting that Emmy? You know what I mean? All the free stuff she's getting, all the more money she's getting, all of that. But yeah, no, nobody's been her bigger enemy than herself. Yeah.
There you go. This is why you need an insider like Tammy Sager.
That's why I wanted to ask the question, because honestly, it's this thing that has followed her for so long, and I do think there is a sexist element to it, because I do think that men have done way worse and literally been nominated for Best Director at the Oscars after their indiscretions. But I will say,
it's hard for me though, because I'm just like, I don't want a female asshole to get away with it just because got away with it.
I think you're right. And I think
assholes just shouldn't get away with it.
I think if she is indeed confirmed an asshole, which, you know, the things that she said are asshole-ish.
I mean, she also does like nice things. She organizes planes for like chihuahuas. You know what I mean? Like, to
I think people contain multitudes.
Yeah,
I think she contains multitudes.
As a writer, I would never want to write for her. Right. I just feel like
you
will
shoot. Because the asshole jumped out.
And it jumps out after a year of work. It didn't jump out at the beginning.
No.
The asshole jumped out.
The asshole. It was a jump out. It wasn't a slow crawl.
Nobody's
and we
asking
do know,
you.
We no. do yeah. know where that comes from, right? When people say the so-and-so jumped out, that comes from Monique on Charm School saying to Pumpkin. Was it Pumpkin?
It was to Pumpkin. Yeah.
She said, your behavior this evening was whore-like.
The whore jumped out. And then it jumped back in.
But it jumped out.
The whore jumped out. I mean, truly, this is what reality TV is made for. And the fact that it has had that lasting impact, huge.
Can't believe Monique won an Oscar for Precious and not that moment.
And not that moment. An Oscar for a VH1 reality show. Okay.
It's time for I Don't Think So, Honey.
I really struggled with my I Don't Think So, Honey.
I'm sure.
So much self-hate went into it.
No!
No, because I'm telling you, I've listened to hundreds of them within like a matter of months and then fully left it until this morning. No.
This is what we do all the time.
This is what we do all the time.
We regularly do this.
Mine is barely written, so let's
should
just...
I go first?
You should go first. I have something very...
Okay, mine is potentially very dumb, but we're going to go.
This is Matt Rogers. I Don't Think So, Honey. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, when people say, hey, it's me. No, bitch. You better say your name if it's the 90s, which is when a lot of people did this. Hey, it's me.
Hey, it's me.
Well, I just picked up the phone. Do I have your voice memorized? Oftentimes, the hey, it's me-ers, I don't think so, honey, then, because I don't know you. I don't know you. If I do, you can just say, hey, it's me. Who's me? Especially, hey, it's me nowadays. Yeah, bitch, I know who you are. I have a cell phone that says your name on it. Mm. I don't need to hear, hey, it's me. Just start the conversation. Everyone's time
seconds.
Is very valuable.
30 seconds.
Hey, it's me. No, you have a name that your mother gave you, and your mother and your father and whomever named you spent a long time. Hey, Tammy, it's Matt, and that is respectful to my parents.
15 seconds.
Hey, it's me. Hey, it's me. Also, I don't like the cadence of it. Hey, it's me.
Hey,
like, it's just
me.
Like, okay, this is too familiar.
Wow.
Especially if we just got off the
Five
phone
seconds.
And then it got disconnected and then you come back on, then hey, it's me. Otherwise, I don't think so, hon.
And that's 1 minute.
Wow.
So, okay.
Masterful down to the second.
Masterful
would
down
you
to
ever
the
call me and then say,
hey,
hey
it's me. And I'd be like, hey, and I just get right
and
into it.
And you get right into it. And that's why you're worth it.
So this is
worth it to talk to.
This is an interesting thing. So for people who you do know, who you are familiar with, you would rather they just cut to the chase. But for people you don't know, they have to introduce themselves to you.
Yes.
Interesting.
Nothing in between. Hey, it's me. No.
Hey, it's me is the in-between, and you don't want that liminal space anywhere.
Here's where hey, it's me rears its head the most in voicemails.
Sure.
And it's like, I know.
Hey, it's me. Yeah.
But here's the I know nowadays. And then, hey, it's me back in the day when you didn't necessarily know who
but
was
also,
calling.
But also, like, I
That's
don't
confusing.
Always have people's... I'm such a procrastinator that I don't always put people's phone numbers in, even, like, it takes 1 second.
Right.
So I sometimes just have a phone number.
Well, sure. And that's
and
why
so then just
you,
like
that's why you need them to say who they are.
Yeah, don't
hey,
assume.
Hey, it's me.
Yeah, just don't assume.
Hey, it's me is never okay.
Never okay. Absolutely. Thank you, Matt. That was inspired.
Thank you for giving me the space.
Okay. I have one. It's very loose.
All right. It's very loose. Yeah. Very loose. The Bowen Yang story.
Oh.
And his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. Getting motherfucking stamps in New York City. I was trying to mail in my absentee ballot for Colorado, sweetie, yesterday. And it took me 7 different locations to finally pick up a sheet of stamps. Here's the rundown. The post office on Atlantic Avenue right by my apartment. The line was egregious. I said, no, I don't have the time for this. Went to 3 different bodegas. They all said, no, we don't. Went to 3 different chain pharmacies, your CVS's, your Duane Reade's, your Walgreens. None of them had stamps. And yet the USPS website said falsely claims that they do. And I was lied to by the internet, which, I mean, nowadays is hack. When the internet lies to you, it's 2 on the nose.
15 seconds.
So finally, I go into Manhattan, go to the post office on Varick. Oh. And thank goodness the lovely gentleman there gave me a sheet of stamps. And this is not
5 seconds. Finish strong.
The Postal Service is wonderful. They were the first line of defense for all these explosives that went out to all these Democratic leaders.
And that's 1 minute.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. So I love a 55-second negative. I don't think so, honey, than a 5-second. But thank you for saving lives.
But
thank
you
for saving
lives. But to my heroes, the Postal Service.
But also, post office, they usually have like a vending machine that you buy stamps.
Oh, I live for a vending machine.
In New York City?
Yeah.
I saw nary a vending machine in these post offices.
Well, okay. But that's
what can
we say?
What can we say? Tammy?
So
Tammy,
I wrote something, not psyched about it, felt like I overthought it and went...
No, stop this.
I know it's going to be brilliant.
It's going to be...
No, it's not. It tried too hard.
No, Tammy.
Stop it. Whatever.
It's literally 100 out of 100 times whenever people say
whatever.
Never enough moment where we always want more.
I don't think so, honey. Okay, is a low ceiling, high floor for success. This is Tammy Sager.
Okay.
This is Tammy Sager's I Don't Think So, Honey. Her time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. Me ending up in the shittiest of all timelines where the Cubs won was the first time of the simulator getting lazy, flipping some switches that never should have been flipped, feeling the outer edges of the Truman Show glitches just in the names of who we are dealing with, like the few Republican senators willing to once in a while stand up. His name is Jeff Flake. It's seriously Flake, and he's not even going to bother running again. And
nope.
Flakes, Ivana and Ivanka. Okay, and the feeling like there are no repercussions for any misbehavior except for the arbitrary swats of the universe fly swatter that somehow managed to splatter Al Franken's body against the walls of the U.S. Senate. Oh, Bill Clinton is still doing a book tour. No one cares. And nobody blinks an eye when number 45 doesn't decry the murder of a Saudi journalist, but instead says that it was the worst cover-up ever. And you can feel his outrage. If only it had been a better cover-up, he could have looked the other way. Oh. He would have screamed fake news, which honestly, remember when that was the problem Hillary was facing before the election?
5 seconds.
And it's like a rapist taking the mantle of victimhood from the raped one. Oh yeah, that's exactly what happened. And I Don't Think So, Honey, when we're accepting a Supreme Court justice saying he was a virgin for years when the allegation was not penetration but almost choking her as he laughed and fumbled and tried to stuff his drunken privileged young rape dick and failed. And he's seen as the victim, and I Don't Think So, Honey. I Don't Think So, Honey.
I have 1 minute and 14 seconds. Every second was essential.
That was, and can I tell you something? That was the most words per minute of any I Don't Think So, Honey. And that puts you in the Guinness Book of World Records.
And the most holistic, all just covered everything that was that is happening. Every ill in society.
It's the I Don't Think So, Honey we need for today.
But I'm also like, what is happening in my other timeline?
Oh, in your other timeline, do you think it's much more positive?
Yeah, I also feel like I'm doing a better job of things. Do you know what I mean?
And the other timeline?
Yeah, I feel like timeline me is just like a lot healthier. Yeah.
You just...
Just like making harder choices that are ultimately better.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
And, but yeah, nothing's,
I do.
Nothing's preventing you from doing that now,
though. I know, except my utter laziness.
Stop.
That's what it is
we
for
all
me,
are.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. This is...
Sadie Cohen.
This is Sadie Cohen.
I can't believe we had Sadie Cohen on the show.
Sadie Cohen
from Amsterdam.
Second, Boom Chicago, Second City legend, Sadie Cohen. And writer for every
show you like.
Perfect television
Love.
Show, Tammy Sager.
This was so great. I was so excited for this episode, and just expectations blown out of the water.
I love you guys. I love this show.
And tears were shed.
Tears were totally shed.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, you guys.
Please watch Orange is the New Black this upcoming season. Final season.
Ooh.
Guru.
And we love Tammy so much.
Wow. You're the best.
You're the best. Okay, we end with a song.
So we end with a song.
Great.
All the stars of a thousand spotlights, all the stars that shine in the night sky will never be enough, never be enough for me, never, never,
bye.
Never enough.
Hey, we gotta go.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.